if you go back in time to 63, if you think about it, like the folk world had such a degree of like coolness and quality and social import, right? Bob Dylan is going to save the world. He's the voice of a generation. And this is just on another fucking planet out here on the West Coast. Teeny bopper, fad bullshit.
Yes, but there is something really notable about all these things happening at the same time, because this is like the building blocks of the 60s as we understand it culturally from a musical perspective. You've got beatniks, basically proto-hippies, involved with folk music at the same time as this surf music that's combining rock and roll and blues and folk. Suddenly, like, the coolest thing you can do is be hanging out around a bonfire at the beach or hanging out in Laurel Canyon. Meanwhile, the Beatles and Bob Dylan popping off. And now we have all the ingredients.
Yeah. Yeah. They, and I mean, everyone ends up kind of dovetailing, you know, colliding there in the middle of the 60s, 65, 66, as, you know, the Beatles are influenced by Bob and Brian wants to compete with the Beatles, and the Beatles want to put all the American groups to shame. And it all kind of doesn't become the same thing necessarily, but everyone kind of meets in the middle in many ways. And yeah, I mean, I think from the beginning, the whole surf culture, teenage, freedom, rebellion is maybe the wrong word, but, you know, excitement that seems to guide a lot of this shit at this moment in time is its own rejection of, you know, hegemonic culture, in the same way that beatnik, espresso, coffee shop culture in New York was a rejection of that culture as well. They're rejecting it in their own unique ways, based, honestly, frankly, on the environment in which they are occurring, because in New York, it's 20 degrees in January and you want to sit inside and smoke cigs. And in Southern California, it's a beautiful 75, so you want to hit the waves with your sweetie baby at that time.
There was a West Coast contingent. Like, there's that Jonathan Richman song about Venice Beach. He lived there for a time and he's talking about like all this kind of weird hippie ephemera like floating around, because like Venice Beach used to actually be kind of like a little like beatnik haven.
Sure.
Like, it did have kind of an actual, I mean, now it does not
long way. Time
it's
ago
like, now it's just like a giant vape shop, but it used to be different. There were actually, like, you know, cafes and a sort of analogous West Coast version of some of that East Coast stuff, but in Southern California for a change.
Many years before Erewhon, off Abbot Kinney.
Oh, the ancient world was in my reach, from my room and house on Venice Beach. It was a cheap. But nowadays I hear that the rents are steep. It was a rougher, with ancient rustic hippie stuff. It was a wild. Oh, you're never gonna call it mild. Oh, hipper. I could move and not make a second trip. The ancient world was in my reach, from my room and house on Venice Beach.
Anyway, all of this is to say that Farmer's Daughter is a good song.
Great song. I love Farmer's Daughter. Yeah, it's I mean, it's not even 2 minutes long. We talked about this on the previous episode, but most of those songs are under 2 minutes. The very longest ones are like 2.5 minutes. This goes by just in a flash, just like that. But it does everything that it needs to, and it's compulsively listenable. This is one of those songs that I just want to turn on again as soon as I get to the end of it. It doesn't really like kind of go to many wild different places, but it's so fundamentally powerful, so fundamentally satisfying that, like, just give me the three verses again and give them to me again and again and again.
Well, just when he breaks into that sweet falsetto at the beginning, It's just like, it reminds me of like the beginning of Heroes and Villains, just like the way it like explodes into frame with his voice.
And this was the quantum leap on this record, which again was just a couple months after Surfing Safari, I should say. But Brian is already becoming so much more powerful as an artist, as a music maker in the studio. He said, on Surfing USA, we developed a stylish sound, the high sound, which became our sound. It was the first time we'd ever sung our voices twice on one record. It strengthens the sound. Sing it once, then sing it again over that, so both sounds are perfectly synchronized. This makes it much brighter and gives it a rather shrill and magical sound without using echo chambers. It makes it sound spectacular. There's so much power. It's as easy as that. You sing it once, you sing it again, it sounds better.
They're calling it doubling the vocal.
Double tracking. revolutionary. But it was that's what's so crazy is like we take that for granted at this time. And it's like, oh, of course it's going to sound great if you sing it and then you sing it again and they're synchronized. But like mm-hmm. this, you know,
a doubled vocal.
Farmer's Daughter, man. You ever listen to the Fleetwood Mac cover?
No, I did not know that there was one.
Oh, it's incredible. They worked on it during the Tusk sessions. You know, Lindsey was just playing it compulsively while they were recording that record. And that was at the moment in time when Christine McVie was dating Dennis. Obviously, that's cannot wait to open that part of Pandora's box.
Wow.
But they were playing it a bunch during the Tusk sessions. And then they played it frequently live on the Tusk tour. You know,
'80
tour.
I'm listening to it now.
It's incredible. It's so good.
The live version is crazy.
Yeah, the easiest one to listen to is the live one that's on the Fleetwood Mac Live 1980 set.
Sounds amazing.
Extraordinary. It's beautiful stuff. Miserloo.
We already, in my long sort of digression, I did talk a bit about just surf music itself, and that is, of course, what we have with Miserloo and Stoked back-to-back here.
One of which is a Beach Boys original, and one of which is not.
Yeah, Dick Dale and the Deltones, I believe, at least originated Miserloo, or made it famous, but did they write?
Yeah,
did they write?
Yeah, it's a Dick Dale song, I think. Who's... The credits are a bunch of, you know, random guys, but it's probably
the Black Eyed Peas. They actually wrote it, right?
Yes, yeah, that's right. No, it's actually a folk song from the Eastern Mediterranean region. It's like rabbitico music. Interesting. I never picked that up.
Yeah, I mean it's
a competent version of Miserloo. It sounds like Miserloo.
It sure does, but it's not like a watered down version. It's a refined version. It doesn't have maybe that same edge.
Not showboating as much as that ham, Dick Dale.
It doesn't sound like surfing monster waves. It sounds like surfing smaller waves than that, but still surfing.
Sure. It's a foundational text of American music, Miserloo. But Stoked.
Stoked.
Oh.
Stoked.
This is what I'm really and like this, I think, is already kind of telegraphing what the Beach Boys are going to turn into in the future, which are these just kind of like weird dudes who are down to just kind of like hang out and vibe and smoke a fat one. Miserloo is, I mean, it's amazing. I love Miserloo. Everyone loves Miserloo, but it's like that isn't the Beach Boys necessarily.
It's relatively anonymous.
Yeah. Anyone plays it. Stoked is the Beach Boys.
But it's Brian, and I think it's Brian just clearly able to make this kind of music because he's already more sophisticated than maybe even he knows or fully understands. But that sophistication, which, you know, shows up like his own voice as a composer and something like Farmer's Daughter, on something like Stoked, it's more like you get to see how good he is at convincingly doing this style in a way that doesn't feel like a cutesy version. It's just like absolutely within his ability to not only just arrange it, I think that he understood what was cool and stylish about this kind of music, and not like the coolest guy on his own necessarily, but he had no trouble getting acquainted and becoming friends with the hippest of the hip, like the people who were involved in every kind of scene, on either coast in the later 60s. I think you can get a sense here for like how he was just able to seamlessly enter that world. Here he is, like, fully just able to lead the band into like sounding cool.
Yeah. This is a great example of them again, like, you know, taking a pretty large leap here already. It could be just a semi-anonymous surfy guitar sounding hangout track, you know, with that riff, which is a great riff that takes through the whole thing. But there's just something in Brian's brain that tells him, you know, at the end of every, you know, eight bars or whatever, let's just pause for a second and have everyone shout, Stoked. I love Stoked. Stoked. Stoked.
Is that Mike at the beginning?
I don't know.
It is, isn't it?
I think it's Brian. Brian's credited as the lead vocal on. Well, is he?
All right, I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
The lead vocal that Brian has on the next song, though, that's a lead vocal from Brian.
That is Brian Wilson.
Lonely Sea.
Extraordinary tune.
It's so cool. It's exactly what I want from a record like this. Like, so far, I'm feeling like I'm in good hands with the number one surfing group in the country.
That's right. You sure are.
Because Lonely Sea has the audacity to actually tone things down and bring a different kind of seriousness to the potentially frivolous nature of a record like this. And it's an important moment because this is exactly what the Beach Boys are and how they became what they became. And we can joke about Farmer's Daughter being a farm song.
Oh, you were joking about that?
No, I mean, it's true. It's a fact. But Lonely Sea is still a surf song, but it actually achieves and effectively creates another layer of depth and texture and mood to the surf song as an idea. It doesn't contradict that premise, but it does move it into another space.
Yes. Yeah. It works within an established framework, you know, established medium here, but towards totally different purposes than that framework had been established for in the first place, in many of the same ways that, you know, Bob does the same sort of thing, using folk music to, you know, work at cross purposes against what, you know, folk music had been. The fact that they start off as just these number one surf group in the country fellas, and then over time it turns into, oh wait, these guys are actually Gershwin and Beethoven.
Well, they are the number one surf group because they are doing something like this. Like, they actually are doing a lot, I think, by having a song like Lonely Sea, which is just a very pretty and restrained ballad. They are doing a lot to legitimize and kind of extend the life of surf music past the point of being just a cash grab, flash in the pan.
Which it was for other people.
Sure, but I think by having any group, you know, the number one group selling these types of records, including a song like this, actually does kind of bring some actual depth into expanding a genre into something that's like, it's not just those songs to chew gum to.
Yeah, I think you're right. But ultimately, to me, I think this says more about the Beach Boys than it does about surf music. And that's why, you know, the next record is going to be Surfer Girl, which obviously Surfer Girl is maybe the greatest example of this style of surf song. But that's it. You know, they at that point, they really put away the surf band branding and move as far away from that early, you know, connotation as they can. And obviously, you know, later on down the road, that comes back and you get Van Dyke Parks and you get songs like Surf's Up and, you know, it works its way back into the mythos. But like Brian, I think, was already kind of chafing at the constraints of surf music as a fixed form because he just had more within him, more he wanted to say, more he wanted to do. And Lonely Sea is a great example of, you know, him taking tentative steps in that direction.
But they weren't taking that many steps away because then they have a song like Shut Down.
Shut Down, man. Oh, man. God, it's just bangers on this one. This is fire after, you know, fire track after fire track.
Is this the first song that's... No, I guess they have 409, which is their first car-centric song. Because, of course, how do you get to the beach?
You gotta get in your car, baby.
That's right.
Hop in the Woody.
This beach is right next to
the road.
And so the Beach Boys actually have, it's, you know, fully within their powers and their jurisdiction to talk about the road and what happens upon it. I love the idea that that's kind of the way the Beach Boys develops. It's just like, well, we're writing songs about the beach. Fine. Okay. Well, there's the road right by the beach. So we can talk about that. And then there's the road that's not near the beach, but, you know,
that's what, this is what I was saying too. And then last time,
and then we can talk about stuff that's near the road. And then
the root beer stand, the county fair, that's on the road also.
What else is on the road? Well, maybe forget about the road. How about just the way that I feel and what happened in my life and the feeling I have like I'm drowning.
Yeah. Well, we'll get there soon enough.